Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today, because we have another really informative educational show that will make such a difference in your life. And that really is the purpose of this program. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know, empowering people with truthful information so they can make the most informed decisions possible regarding their health and well-being. And as always, there is a fantastic conversation in store for you. This is an opportunity really to just keep expanding our horizons, to get more resources so we can really traverse the many terrains of our own health and those of the people that we love and care about. I want to let everyone know I have a great website, which is What Women Must Know, and I certainly invite everyone to go over there, opt into my newsletter. I have some free special reports waiting for you. You are able to get a variety of articles that are on my site. It's an educational portal that really has lots of wonderful information, and it's about to be improved even more because I have a new website in the works, so that's really exciting for me, a lot more that I want to be sharing with you. And I have a great Facebook page, by the way, which is What Women Must Know, and I get very enthusiastic about posting important articles, information, recipes, things that really I feel will add to your knowledge bank. So go up there, just like me at What Women Must Know, and it'll just be another one of those resources that will really support you. So let's talk about our topic today and my very special guest. We're going to be talking about the most important things you must know about oral health. And we're doing this amazing topic with Dr. Michael Goldberg. Here's a little bit about him. Dr. Michael Goldberg is a magna cum laude graduate of Tufts University School of Dental Medicine, and he describes himself as having a chronic case of professional attention deficit disorder. I can really relate to that. An incurable, though socially acceptable condition. He has coined the term biorational dentistry to describe his practice philosophy and approach. He was elected to OKU, is a fellow of the American College of Dentists, the Academy of General Dentistry, the International Academy of Dental Facial Aesthetics, and the New York Academy of Dentistry. He is a founding member of the Academy of Oral Systemic Health and was on faculty at Columbia University School of Dental Medicine for 30 years. He serves on the board of directors of Glide Health, a health information management company, and currently serves as president of American Friends of DVI, a not-for-profit organization that supports the DVI clinic, which gives free care to indigent children of all races, religions, and ethnicities in Jerusalem. He is also the author of a wonderful book called What the Tooth Fairy Didn't Tell You, and Dr. Goldberg practices biorational dental medicine in New York City. So there we go. We're in for an amazing interview and conversation today with Dr. Michael Goldberg. So hello and welcome, Dr. Goldberg.
Thank you so much, Dr. Selman.
Well, you have such a full and varied life. It's very exciting, isn't it?
For me, maybe not as much for my wife and family. They think I'm a little crazy, so.
But they love you anyway, so.
Of course
that's
they
what
do.
Counts. You know, hey, you know, everyone's got to have a little crazy member of their family. I'm one of those. I can understand. You know.
I think you and I are very similar.
I think we've got a lot of similarities. I love it. I love how you describe yourself as having a chronic case of professional attention deficit disorder. It's like so many things we want to learn and explore and share with people. There's just a you know, a world of possibilities out there, and we're always seeking those answers. And I know that's what you're dedicated to in your practice. You know, I know you're one of the founders of the Academy of Oral Systemic Health, and I attended one of their conferences recently, which was so fascinating, and it really was an eye-opening experience and learning more about oral systemic health. And we're going to talk about that today because, you know, when I was talking to you before the show, I had mentioned maybe we should talk about what people must know about your teeth and gums, and you were right in saying, no, I think we should be focusing on oral health because there is a revolution happening in the understanding of our mouth and what's going on in our mouth and how our mouth is an expression of what's happening in our body, and what's happening in our mouth can affect what's going on in our body. So it's a much bigger and broader understanding and paradigm than the traditional model of dentistry. So maybe that's a good place to start. We can explain more about what this oral health model is. What is oral systemic health?
That's a great question. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to discuss it, because it's not something that most dentists nor most physicians really appreciate and look at. So I think you can start by saying that there are three things that travel through the body from the mouth, and those three things are air, saliva, and blood. Those three things are in your mouth, and they go elsewhere in the rest of your body. And with that, they bring the things from the rest of your body to your mouth and from your mouth to the rest of the body. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Great. So you look at those things and you say, okay, air. Well, that seems pretty obvious. We all need air. But how do we get air? Well, we get air both through our nose and through our mouth. So the shape of your mouth, the position of your jaw, the shape of the roof of your mouth, which is actually the lower part of your nasal cavity, is really important in determining how you breathe. It's something we all need to do. Saliva. You know, we have saliva in our mouth all the time. We need it to eat properly. We need it to lubricate our mouths. But it carries with it whatever is in the mouth as we swallow it down through the rest of our gastrointestinal system. And then, of course, the blood travels through your gums so that anything that is exposed to your blood, like plaque and bacteria from your mouth, travels through the rest of your body. And anything that's going on in the rest of your body as that blood traverses through your mouth is picked up in the tissues of the mouth as well.
Okay, that makes sense. Michael?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. It was just a long silence. Okay. I thought I lost you there. Okay. So those are all really important components to understanding why our mouth, and as we talk about it as our oral health, is so critical. So where do we begin in starting to bring greater oral health, and, you know, and how do these factors affect the health of our teeth? Because we're looking at infections. In fact, let's talk about periodontal disease and how common that is and what to really look for and why is that a problem.
So periodontal disease or gum disease is the most common disease in man other than tooth decay. Tooth decay is number one, gum disease number two. So it's a huge issue because gum disease really represents an inflammatory process. We're all about taking anti-inflammatory herbs and supplements and even the foods that we eat so that we can combat inflammation, because we know that inflammation has a negative effect on our aging process. So periodontal disease being the most common inflammatory disease in man is a huge issue when it comes to overall health, contributing to all kinds of things. It contributes to the cardiac issues that people have. It contributes to things like Alzheimer's disease. It contributes to lung issues like pneumonia. It contributes to certain cancers and things like low birth weight babies and premature births. So inflammation in the mouth, as I said, it gets carried via the blood system and via saliva as well throughout the rest of the body, affecting the rest of the body.
So when most people go to their dentist and they're going to do some more, I guess, cleaning or whatever people do at traditional dentists, which I don't go to, but they are often encouraged to have an antibiotic before they do the procedure, or many people do for some procedures, dental procedures. Isn't that correct?
That's actually becoming less and less recommended. Yeah, even the American Academy, the Heart Association, has discontinued their recommendation of routinely giving antibiotics for certain heart ailments because they realize that, well, first of all, there's no evidence-based medicine that says that it's really effective, and they realize that taking antibiotics in and of itself causes other problems.
Absolutely. So that's a good thing.
That's
I'm
a
glad
really
to hear
good
that. Because it's I know my mother would always tell me when she went to their dentist, she would often be asked if she wanted antibiotics. You know, and that's the last population you want to be giving prophylactic antibiotics to.
Absolutely.
And to pregnant women, too. Didn't they do that as well for a while?
I never did. But, you know, there are doctors who are very they consider themselves conservative. I don't consider that conservative. I think when you give antibiotics, you're actually being fairly aggressive. But there are local ways of dealing with the bacteria that come out of the gums when cleanings are being done. So, you know, understand that the reason that there was a concern that you want that necessitated the or recommended the use of antibiotics was that when you do a cleaning on someone whose gums are sore, the bacteria are going to get into the bloodstream and travel throughout the body.
Mm-hmm.
And they may seed themselves in other areas of the body that also have issues, whether or not it's a leaky heart valve or it's an artificial joint or some other inflamed area. So that's the concern. The best way I know of dealing with it is not on a systemic level, but on a local level. Have somebody rinse their mouth out with an antibacterial type of rinse so that we lower the level of bacteria that are going to be introduced into the bloodstream without having to give somebody, basically a systemic antibiotic that travels everywhere and who knows what the unintended consequences of that are.
So can I just share with you one of my favorite natural antibacterial mouthwashes?
Absolutely.
One of the products that I have been researching and writing about and actually using for years is a nano-silver product called Silver Biotics, which research has shown that it can actually kill infections within minutes. And it's antibacterial, it's antifungal, it's antiviral. There are no side effects. It's compatible with antibiotics or is effective without them in dealing with infections of all sorts. So I use that as a mouthwash. I use it to just support my immunity on a daily basis. But it's a fantastic product. So it's one that I absolutely endorse, and it's called Silver Biotics. And easily available on the internet. I don't know if it's available in many stores, health food stores, but it is online. So it's just something people should check out. I don't know. What's your favorite? Do you have your favorite one?
So I like, actually, I'm also trying to get things done as easily as possible. So we actually have a little salt water solution with a tiny, tiny little bit of peroxide that we have people swish around. Easy, simple. The salt acts as an antibacterial, the peroxide, and again, just a tiny, tiny little bit of it. I'm not a huge fan of using peroxide on a regular basis. It's an oxidizing agent. We have to be a little cautious about those. But before people have their teeth cleaned, after, we give them this little rinse, and it works out just great.
Oh, that's great. That sounds really simple, easy to do, safe, and effective.
But I think the thing is, what you mentioned was correct. I mean, you want to do things as locally as you possibly can to avoid those unintended consequences of using things that are systemic.
So, Dr. Goldberg, for people listening, can you let them know what are some signs of periodontal disease? Because I would imagine there are people out there who have this problem, but either are not aware of it or possibly ignoring it, as I've done for many years myself for a while, and pay the consequences, to be honest. So maybe that would be something good to share with people. What do they need to look for? What are some of the signs and indicators that they are dealing with an infection of their gums or, periodontal disease, as it's also known?
So that's a great question, because the fact is that periodontal disease at its earliest and even middle stages doesn't hurt. So people might not know that they have it. So the signs to look for, I think, are really important. The first would obviously be bleeding. Bleeding gums is not normal under any circumstances. So if you see a little pink in the sink after you brush your teeth, that's an indication that there's something going on that you need to look at. The other thing is loose teeth. Are your teeth loose? They're not supposed to be loose, not unless you're a child and you're about to lose one. Your teeth are supposed to be pretty strong. So if they're loose, that may be an indication that there's something going on in the bone underneath. Bad breath. One of the more common causes of bad breath is periodontal disease, because as I said, people don't really know they have periodontal disease. It doesn't really hurt until it gets pretty far along. And at that point, it's affected the bone, and there's actually pus that can be coming out of the gum crevice. That causes bad breath. So I think those three things, loose teeth, bad breath, and of course, bleeding, the most common.
And what are your favorite strategies when you work with your patients to help them address this problem if they notice they have some bleeding gums? What's your strategy or protocol you offer them so they can get on top of this?
So we want to know why it's happening. So that's the way we look at just about everything. We want to look at the big picture. What's going on that's contributing to this? Because unless we know the why, we're not going to really understand how we can resolve it. Or if we do resolve it, and if the why is still there, it's going to come back. So oftentimes, it's the bacteria, the microbiome, if you would, of the individual, and how they're responding to it. And that's something that needs to be evaluated and can be changed. We talk about removing bacteria, and we also talk about trying to change the bacteria in the mouth. We're just starting to understand what that really entails. We know that the bacteria that we get in our mouths are basically acquired through our parents. We actually get the microbiome from our parents. As a matter of fact, there's a great deal of a study now about the difference between C-section babies and vaginally delivered babies. They have a different microbiome. And there's a school that says that C-section babies should have vaginal smears of the mother actually put into the infant's mouth so that they get the natural bacteria that the mother is supposed to give the baby.
Wow, that's a great – I just have to jump in here because that's so profound, because having worked with a lot of these infants who've been born cesarean and being aware that when they are brought into the world, they're brought into – you know, they're lifted up out of the mother into an operating theater environment, breathing in the wrong microorganisms that can establish the wrong community in their gut, which – often leads to dysbiosis, they get eczema, colic, it can start a lifelong problem. So being able to inoculate these babies with the right microorganisms is, to me, a major breakthrough that you're sharing, because I put these kids on certain types of probiotics to help introduce the proper microorganisms. But to start at that very beginning of life with the mother's vaginal microorganisms is, to me, very profound, and people are, the medical model is starting to wake up to that. Very promising.
Right. I mean, look, just asking whether or not somebody was born C-section or vaginally, I think is a good thing to know. I mean, how did this all start? You know, asking about the parents. You know, do your parents have gum problems? Did they have their teeth removed? Do they have dentures? You want to know all that, because that's part of the puzzle that will allow you to deal with the individual. And I think that's really the key. Everybody's sort of looking for a magic bullet to treat everybody's gum disease. And everyone's gum disease is different. We're all individuals. And one of the biggest problems I see in the healthcare field is that no one wants to look at an individual. They want a formula. Do it this way for everybody. But we're all different. So the answer for you may be different from the answer for someone else. And that's one of the biggest challenges I think we all have in getting our health care.
I absolutely agree. This is why I'm so fascinated by personalized medicine, and I incorporate nutrigenomic testing, which personalizes one's choice of nutrition and foods and supplements based on what we've inherited through our genes, which is so profound and makes such a big difference for people's health. And it certainly, I believe, saved my life, knowing very specifically what I needed and based on my genes. And this is really the leading edge. It's personalized medicine. And the more we can incorporate that in all of the modalities of healing, the more we will really be able to get truly effective results with our health and maintain it and to be able to heal our bodies as well. And it's true in dentistry as it is anywhere else.
No, it's great. I mean, look, thank you, because you're really providing a tremendous service, because it all starts with education. No one knows one's body as well as oneself. And you need to understand your body as well as possible before someone else is going to be able to tell you about it. And I think, listening to programs like this, reading about it on the net, it's the reason that I wrote my book, because I just thought that there wasn't a lot of really good information and a lot of misinformation. But the more people understand about things as how they relate to themselves, the better off they're going to be when they go looking for health practitioners who are going to be able to help them.
So can we talk about two really big topics, and you may have a few others, and I want to know more about your form of dentistry, the biofunctional dentistry as well. The one really controversial topic is root canals. So I'd like to know what your thoughts are about root canals.
Great topic.
Oh, isn't it? It's a tough one.
It is. And it's, like I said, it's a topic that is challenging because I think it's different for different people. And it's different for people at different times in their lives. because we're now looking at people living longer and keeping their teeth longer. And that presents some challenges. So if you ask about a root canal in a 20-year-old, it might be different than a root canal in a 60-year-old or in an 80-year-old. Depends on, again, the individual. So we can discuss some broader issues. Root canals, I think, personally, in and of themselves, when done properly, are a great service for certain people. The concerns that have been raised of bacteria being trapped in certain areas, I think, are minimized by the kinds of root canal processes that are being done, how they're done, and how someone's immune system is dealing with that. So there are people who deal well with immune challenges, and there are people that don't do well with immune challenges. That's where individual medicine is so important. So if you have somebody who has an immune challenge and that doesn't, and if they can't deal with that immune challenge well, doing a root canal may be a problem. So root canals in and of themselves, I don't think, are the issue. I think how someone reacts to root canals is really the issue. Same thing with implants. You could say the same process would be at play with dental implants. And that might be true for certain individuals. It might not be true for others. So I think you have to look at things on an individual basis. And that's really why when someone came to me and said, can you describe your approach to dental care, I came up with the term biorational, because I said, I need to rationalize what I do based on the entire person's biology. What's going on? What's affecting? What effects am I going to have with the treatment that I render to this person, trying to avoid, as I said, these unintended consequences. You know, sometimes we do things, we don't understand what consequences there are going to be. You want to try and minimize those unintended consequences whenever possible. So root canal can have some unintended consequences. So you have to understand what those can possibly be and relate those to the entire person, rather than just looking at a space in someone's mouth.
So what are some of those unintended consequences? And second part to that question, what should people look for in a dentist when they have an issue and are considering a root canal? What kinds of questions, what kinds of approaches do they need to ask their dentist so they are getting the best care? Because there are a lot of variations of a theme out there.
Right. So that's a complicated question.
Okay,
I think
good time.
Yeah, I think the first thing to know is that the dentist needs to use the most sterile techniques possible while doing the procedure. So they use something that's called a rubber dam, which is something that basically blocks whatever is going on in the mouth from getting into the canal, because we want to make sure that that canal is able to be sterilized as well as possible. There are different techniques of sterilizing. There are people who use lasers. There are people who use certain medications and chemicals. There are people who use ozone. There are all different ways of sterilizing the canal. The key is that the canal needs to be sterilized, so that you minimize the risk of trapping bacteria in there. The other thing you want to know is, how is this tooth going to be restored? Because a tooth that has root canal, you're removing the tissue that's inside the root of the tooth. There's a canal in the root, hence root canal. And there's tissue inside. you're removing that tissue. Now, why is that tissue there? That tissue is there partly to form the tooth. It's sort of stuck in there. It went along for the ride. But it also, and we know this now, it also provides nutrients to the root of the tooth. When you take that tissue out, you no longer have those nutrients supplied from the internal part of the tooth. The only way that part of the tooth can get those nutrients is from the outer part of the tooth, from the ligaments. There is an exchange of fluids. I'd want to know whether or not this tooth can actually function well after the root canal is done. How is it going to be restored in a way that keeps that tooth functional? I use the analogy of a tree. When you have a tree that's living, fluid is going up and down, and that tree is flexible and can bend in the wind. When that tree dies, there's no longer any fluid going up and down, and that tree becomes stiff. And a stiff wind comes, and that tree can break. It's actually the same kind of thing with a tooth. Teeth flex. And when they have this fluid from the tissue that's inside the tooth in the root canal, when it's giving nutrients to that tooth is pretty flexible. But once the tooth has root canal, it loses some of that flexibility. Now, is that an issue for you? It might be. It depends on many, many factors, including how many other teeth you have, what kind of stresses there are in the rest of your mouth. Are you a grinder? Are you a clencher? These are all things that have to be taken into consideration. Rather than just say root canal is bad or root canal is not bad, is it right for you based on your particular needs?
So that sounds like a really enlightened approach to understand the question of root canals, because I know there's so much controversy. What would you advise people who are seeking out someone who has this understanding? Where would they go to find someone who can relate to everything you just said?
So I have a whole chapter in my book about how to find a good dentist. And one of the things I recommend is I recommend you interview somebody. You know, you don't know exactly what their approach is. And there are dentists who are very upfront with it, and they put their approaches on their website. And I think that that's a great place to start. But there are some dentists who aren't on the internet and may be great dentists for you. How do you know? You can ask. I welcome people who call and say, can I meet with a doctor to talk about my needs? And we do that at no cost. Mm-hmm. We do it complimentary, because I want, as a healthcare practitioner, I want people to be comfortable with me and my philosophy. So if my patients are comfortable with what I'm doing, I know that my results are going to be even better, because I know that what goes on in someone's head is really important in what goes on in the rest of their body as well. Mm-hmm. So if someone has confidence and trust in me, that's a great thing. So
yeah,
I think interviewing...
Well, I was just going to say, it's a really interesting point. I don't know if most people would even consider interviewing their dentist before proceeding.
I don't think they do. I mean, mm-hmm. We get some requests. You know, we get requests from people who've been abused by the system. You know, they've gone through so many practitioners, and they still have the same problems or more than they've had previous. And, you know, they're just looking for answers. And some of these people will call and ask if – and we suggest it, actually. You want to know if we're right for you? Come on in and talk to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like a really not just the sane way, but it's a responsible way to be with for patients to have the conversation, for their practitioners to have the time to explain and develop a rapport.
Well, you know, and that brings up another issue, and that is time. And oftentimes, patients as well as healthcare providers don't want to invest the time. They just want the answer. And sometimes it takes time to get the right answer. As a matter of fact, most of the time it takes time to get the right answer. And that investment pays off. It pays off big time in the long run. But time is also valuable. It's the only thing we have is our time. And we want to use it effectively. So that brings up the whole issue of the economics relative to the time that it takes to do things. Doing things the right way often takes more time. Mm. And that's something that one has to factor into their decision-making process.
You know, and that does bring up another question. So I just need to ask it because I hear this from so many people. They require dental work. They need either a root canal or an implant, but it's so expensive in this country to get good dental care. Why is that, Michael? What can people do about it?
That is a huge question. I mean, that's the problem with our system. Our system is geared towards finances being tied to procedures instead of to results. I went to a great conference a couple of years ago at the Cleveland Clinic, and they were discussing how much money we as a nation pay for our health care relative to GNP, gross national product, and we're like almost the highest in the world. We spend a lot of money on our health care, and yet we're nowhere near the top when it comes to how healthy we are. We're ridiculously off the top of the charts when it comes to, as a nation, how healthy we are. So we're spending the money, but we're not getting the results. And the question is how that changes. I've written 2 letters to the president in my life. I'm not a political activist, but I saw an opportunity when President Obama was elected to really change healthcare. I mean, that's part of what he wanted to do. And I don't think he went about it as effectively as he could have. He had an opportunity. I think we're spending enough money for everybody to get great health care. But it's not happening because the money's not going in the right place. And it has to start, like everything, you have to look at the big picture, and it has to start at the bottom. How are we educating our health care providers? I have students who are coming out of school $500,000 in debt for their education.
Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous. That's amazing.
Right. These healthcare practitioners are going to be saddled with a burden of having to pay back these loans, and they do it by providing healthcare. Mm-hmm. That's not a great incentive to provide inexpensive healthcare. It's quite the opposite. Mm-hmm. So there are all kinds of issues related to, you know, how our healthcare system is structured. That's unfortunately way beyond yours and my ability to change here. But I mean, I think everybody needs to understand that. The other thing is that, you know, dentistry has never been considered part of overall health. So Medicare, for instance, pays nothing. for mm-hmm. dental care. It's a healthcare insurance type plan, but it provides nothing for dental care. So there's a disconnect in this country, and until we're able to sort of reorganize things, dental care is just going to be expensive.
Yeah, it's out of pocket. And well, so there are some dental insurance plans. Are they worth it from your point of view? You don't take insurance, right?
No, I don't.
Right.
And the reason is I really don't want to be dictated to how I do things. I want to do things that my patients need on an individual basis, and insurance companies don't recognize certain things. They certainly don't respect time as a factor in the cost of doing business. They just look at procedures. And I don't consider myself a procedure dentist. I'm a biorational dentist. I look at people.
Right.
And there's no code for that for insurance
right.
purposes. Insurance companies are in the business of making money. They're not in the business of giving health. And that's an issue. And it's an issue that I discussed in my letters to President Obama. If you really want to change things, blow it up and start over again. I mean, change it as health. Everyone needs to be healthy. We're spending too much money. It's costing us, as taxpayers, it's costing us too much money. We deserve better. And the only way we're going to get it is if we actually get insurance companies out of the business, because they're in the business of making money for their shareholders. People need to understand that. They're not in the business of providing health. That's a secondary issue to them. Their primary goal is money. And you need to take that money out of the equation. I like the idea of the single-payer system.
Right.
That's what other countries have done.
So do you think – I just want to go back to health and dental insurance. Do you think it's worth people investing in dental insurance, or should they take money and just put it into an account and save it and use it where they want to rather than being forced to?
So if you understand insurance, you understand that insurance works because they spread the risk. So the only dental insurance that is really – and first of all, dental insurance is a misnomer. It's really not insurance, because if you have big needs, it's not going to cover them. It's not like if you have, God forbid, have an auto accident, you break several bones, and they're going to fix everything, and your insurance is going to cover it. Dentistry is not like that. Dentistry is capped. Dental insurance is usually capped to a maximum per year, and that maximum per year really hasn't changed in decades. It ranges somewhere between $1,000 and $2,000. That's not a lot. So I use the example, if you broke your hand and you went into the doctor and the doctor says, well, your insurance company will fix two of the fingers now, and next year they'll fix the next two fingers, and the year after that they'll fix the fifth, and that way we can fix all the fingers on your broken hand. Hmm. That's sort of similar to what an insurance company is saying to their clients. They're saying, well, we'll pay for a couple of teeth, but once you reach that maximum, we're not going to pay anything. You have to wait another year. So it's really a limited rebate program. You have a problem. They give you a certain amount of money for that procedure. And once you run out of the allotted amount of money, they don't cover you anymore. So that's not what we normally think of as insurance, but that's what is being sold. So an insurance company limits their liability. That way they can keep the premiums relatively low, because if they were to insure big problems, nobody would be able to afford the premiums. Mm-hmm. The only insurance that makes any sense is insurance that currently insurance that is gotten through a large, large group. So if you belong to a big group, then that group has an insurance plan. Those kinds of plans may be worthwhile because they spread the risk. The insurance company spreads the risk over a large number of people, and they can keep the premiums relatively low.
They rely. I just want to say, I'm just going to jump in here, because might be of interest to people listening, because there's a plan that I was able to learn about I'm self-employed, right? So there's a plan that was called a health savings account. So do you know about health savings accounts?
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of them?
Yes, absolutely.
They're fantastic.
It's basically self-insurance.
Yes, well, you can put up to, $5,000 or $6,000 a year, which is tax deductible, into a health savings account. You have to be self-employed, and I think you have to have your basic health insurance. And then you are free to use it on any health, dental-related issue you need at any time. So you can accrue it. I got interested because it was a way to defer taxes. But also it made me save money that I have used for dental issues and things like that. And I think it's the flexible saving account. I think that's the name of it for people who are employed. But they have, for some, a freedom to put money away. And that became the vehicle that I was able to do my dental work, which was expensive, and also have some tax deductions for the time being.
So that's a great, great point. And I think what people should know is that the government is slowly eroding away that benefit.
Really? Because that was great.
Sure.
It was great. And because there's no oversight on it, I could use it on whatever I wanted to related to any issue.
It allows the individual to make their own health care decisions. And that's great. But that's not what the government nor insurance companies really want. So they've taken the benefit and they've pared it down. So it's much harder to do, and you can put away less money than you used to be able to. So I think in the flexible spending accounts, they've now capped it at $2,500, whereas several years ago it was $5,000.
Yeah, interesting. I found that to be a really helpful
for those people who can do it. It's great.
Yes.
It's a great benefit for employers to offer their employees.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the last few minutes that we have of our time together, what would be your five most important tips to give to people regarding oral health and protecting and optimizing oral health?
Zero tolerance for bleeding. Number one. You see blood, there's a problem, make sure you get it taken care of. See a healthcare provider, a dentist, a hygienist, who understands your needs. Speak up, open your mouth, not figuratively, but literally, and say, I want to know what's right for me. And tell your healthcare provider, your dentist, your hygienist, exactly what's going on. Tell them what's going on with the rest of your health. Don't think that what's going on in your stomach has nothing to do with what's going on in your mouth. What's going on in the rest of your body is important with what's going on in your mouth, and vice versa. So even if your doctor, your healthcare provider is not asking you these questions, you need to be forthcoming about that. Monitor your saliva. Saliva is a huge, huge, hugely important factor in your oral health. Many medications that are given dry out people's saliva. It's one of those unintended consequences that has a huge consequence on oral health. It promotes dry mouth, promotes gum problems, and promotes decay, probably promotes other kind of gastrointestinal issues as well. So monitoring your saliva is hugely important as well. Eating properly, supporting your oral health is is integral with the foods that you're putting in your mouth. So eat a diet that's going to allow you to have healthy teeth. One of the biggest things is chewing properly. Again, we're meant to work a certain way. We're meant to chew our foods properly. When you chew, you not only break down the foods properly so that they can be digested in the rest of your system, but you also stimulate saliva. The muscles of chewing are actually located right next to the glands that pump out the saliva. Chewing is an important process of the digestive process. I think that's four.
No, good.
I think I owe you one more.
Okay, one more.
And that is be comfortable with the people that provide you health. I hear all the time people telling me that they don't like their doctor. And I'm saying, why would you go to somebody that you don't like? This is somebody you're sharing your innermost secrets with. You need to like the person. So I think a great thing to do is to interview your healthcare providers. Make sure they're people who understand your individual needs. And listen, you need to find somebody who's going to listen to you. And listening, unfortunately, in today's environment is in short supply. So thank you for listening to me.
Well, you've had some great wisdom to share with us, and I really encourage people to pick up a copy of Dr. Michael Goldberg's book, What the Tooth Fairy Didn't Tell You. It has some great information about everything we talked about and a whole lot more, really good strategies, lots of options, understanding your teeth, your gums. Where is the best place for people to get a copy of What the Tooth Fairy Didn't Tell You?
It's on Amazon.
Okay.
It's on Amazon. They can also go to my website, which is ManhattanDentalHealth.com, and it gives them some interesting information. They can contact us, and I offer this as a as something for your listeners. I just wrote a great white paper. It's entitled A Physician's Guide to Dry Mouth and Xerostomia. And if they'd like a copy of that, I can certainly email them to email a PDF of it to your readers if they ask for it. So if they go to the information portion of the website and just type, I'd like a copy of the dry mouth report, we'd be happy to send it to them.
So give your website one more time.
ManhattanDentalHealth.com.
ManhattanDentalHealth.com. And I know I have a lot of listeners from New York City, so you might even find some of them coming to ask you some questions.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Well, it has been such a delight talking with you today. You are such a pioneer in the area of oral health, really a paradigm shifter, an outlier, as we said, and another heretic, one that's near and dear to my heart. So I just so appreciate the commitment you have to finding the best solutions for your patients. And it's just a wonderful privilege to be able to talk to you today, Dr. Michael Goldberg.
Thank you for fighting the fight.
and to all my listeners, thank you for fighting the fight and staying with me. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.